Okay, so we will do MDPs today, the atomic models of it, and at some point of time next class, hopefully, we will start looking at factored models or propositional models for solving MDPs, as I mentioned last time. Just to give you an idea, how many of you have already, before this course, knew about MDPs? Okay, so not too many looks like, but you all read the chapter this time, okay. So what I will try to do is go relatively fast to the extent I can, but you know, stop me if you have any questions, okay. So we were talking about what the model is, and in fact this is what looking at. So you can think of the search model, which sort of leads to finding single line type plans, and so the propositional version of search is planning, propositional directional version of search is planning, and you can actually, I mean, you know, in some sense if you generalize the atomic model itself such that it also allows the generalized reward models. In the sense, you no longer are just getting reward in the final state, you're getting reward for just going through states, okay? And you also allow stochastic actions, then you get the atomic model, then basically A star search won't be enough for that, okay? In fact, before you jump from normal A star search to Markov addition processes, in fact, it turns out there are other things. So A star search would be deterministic actions and goals of attainment. And then here is MDPs, which are deterministic, I mean basically will support stochastic actions, and then deterministic goals of attainment, fully observable. Okay, and stochastic, and in fact the funny thing about deterministic actions is if your domain is deterministic, then it really doesn't matter whether the domain is observable or not. Do people see that? Okay, so in fact if the domain is deterministic, about the only thing that matters is whether you know the initial state. If you know the initial state, then by definition you know everything else. You never actually have to open your eyes in a deterministic domain with a completely non-initial state, okay? Whereas if the domain is not, if the world is, the environment is not deterministic, then it's, you do need to keep looking after every action. Even if you know where you started from, you have to keep looking to see where you are. So something that you want to keep in mind. So MDPs are essentially stochastic actions and generalized reward. And in between, you can actually, there are special cases, which for example, AO star can be used for supporting conformant planning, which is basically planning over partially observable worlds with goals of attainment. Okay, and then similarly, even more than MDPs are PomDPs, which is even more general model, where it has this, plus partial observability. Okay, so we are going to kind of, there's this whole idea of whether or not the world is observable, that the observability of the world, if you don't have fully observable world, then you have something called belief states, which basically means if you stop the agent at any point and ask, do you know where you are? Okay, if it's a fully observable world, the agent can, I mean, if it's a deterministic world and the agent started from a completely known initial state, it knows where it is. It can be sure where it, you know. If it is in this kind of a scenario, a stochastic world, but it's fully observable, the agent won't necessarily know where it is, but it just has to open its eyes until it knows where it is. Okay, but if the agent, if the world is not fully observable, then the answer to the question, do you know where you are, is one of these states. Okay, so in fact the belief states can basically be, you know, you can say I probably am in some state S1 to S10. Or I can also say here is the distribution that I have corresponding to the probability that I am in S1 and S2, etc., up to S10. Okay, we will skip belief states right now, we'll get to that. In some sense actually we are going to relax observability, full observability, the last. Okay, because that winds up, you know, complicating things even more. However, I just want to mention that if in fact you went from this world to a world where you have essentially non-deterministic non-deterministic dynamics, in the sense all you would know is it's a partially observable world and you don't have stochastic information as to how likely you are in different states, then basically then what happens is instead of if you have the original system has states S1 to SN, then essentially a belief state is a subset of S1 to SN, the set S1 to SN, which means a belief state, there are actually only 2 power n belief states. Okay, and so you can actually have a set of problems where with non-deterministic uncertainty because of the partial observability, you will be able to start with a belief state and do actions until all the belief states basically correspond to the goal states. And that's the idea called confinement planning. We'll come to that later. The only point is that that requires just AO star search, doesn't need MDPs and doesn't need PomDPs. So there are easier cases in between, but we would come to that later. Okay. As far as MDPs, as I said, I mean, if you also allow uncertain sensing, that means if you don't know about the world, then you get partial observable MDPs. There is an alphabet soup of actual MDPs. If you start having other agents in the world, then you start having DEC, decentralized. Okay, and here is an interesting thing. There is, you think of having DEC MDPs and DEC PomDPs. But if you look at the literature for these words, you never see the word DEC MDP. Can you see why? This is a very minor question. It should be something you should be able to reason it out. Why aren't DEC MDPs at all interesting? Nobody seems to be working on DEC MDPs. Yes? No, it implies that your brain is transparent. So I can look through your brain to see. The whole interesting thing about having other agents is what the heck is going on in their minds. That's what we don't know, right? To the extent you don't, if you say DEC MDPs, that means you have multiple agents and they have all transparent brains. So to me, I know exactly what you're thinking. I know exactly what you're thinking. That makes no sense. In fact, there are no multi-agent scenarios where every agent knows every other agent's brain. Okay? So multi-agent scenarios by definition are going to have partial observability about the intentions of the other agents. That's why you only have DEC PomDPs, not DEC MDPs. It's unfortunate. Okay? Anyway, so that's the story for that, and let's just and then, you know, I mentioned just now that in terms of handling uncertainties, as I said, for MDPs, to go from A star to MDPs, you can either have stochastic dynamics or you can have generalized reward or both. Okay. Now, if you're thinking in terms of uncertainty, which is stochastic dynamics, you can talk about two kinds of uncertainty. One is what's called disjunctive or non-deterministic uncertainty. That means if I do an action in this state, I will get the following states, one of the following states, S1 to S10. But I don't have any information as to what's the probability that S1 will show up versus S2 will show up versus S10 will show up. So that's non-determinism. Stochastic means it's this plus you have extra knowledge as to how much probability is it that you will be in S1 versus S2 versus S3 versus SM. Okay, now the interesting thing is non-deterministic planning sometimes tends to be easier. I mean, the problems for non-deterministic planning tend to be easier than stochastic planning. Why? Because in some sense, in a non-deterministic scenario, the only reasonable goals are to say, make sure that you will achieve the following proposition, irrespective of what you do. Okay? In which case, whether you are an S1, S2, S3 here, or S1, etc., up to S100 here, you know, whatever your belief state is, all those states must satisfy the goal state. That's the only reasonable goal you can ask in a non-deterministic. Because there are two possibilities. One is the goal is necessarily true by the end of the plan. The other is the goal is possibly true by the end of the plan. But the possibly true is so weak that it's basically useless. Do you understand what I'm saying? And so mostly you will be asking in the non-deterministic planning, in fact, the quote-unquote conformant planning, for example, would say that irrespective of what you do, at the end, the goals must be satisfied. Can you give me a plan? And sometimes you'll say, no, I can't give you a plan and I'm done. Okay. Whereas this guy can say, can you give me the optimal probability of reaching the goal, highest probability of reaching the goal? Give me a plan that with highest probability reaches the goal state. That would be, no. So more things can be asked for this problem. But this one has more knowledge, but it also can be, you know, can also ask more interesting questions. Okay? So that's how those models are related, in a sense. Okay? And notice, of course, that on top of this, in MDP, you also have the generalized reward model. That means you can wind up having, you know, rewards in every state. Anyway, so without further ado, here is like a formal definition of the MDP. So MDP has essentially these components, a finite set of states, a finite set of actions, and a transition function, which tells you if you do this action in this state, what is the probability you will be in this other state? Okay, that's the TSAF dash is a probability number. Right? Okay. So that's why, so that's the probability that you will be in S dash if you were to do action A in state S. That's what it is. Okay. Now it's a Markov transition function because you assume that the probability that you will be in S dash given that you did action A in state S does not depend on how you got to state S. Does not depend on how you got to state S. Okay, and one of the interesting things, you know, jumping ahead, is when you start having partially observable version of this model, okay, then essentially the transition function is no longer Markov. So you then, and if the transition function is not Markov, sometimes what you can do is you can compile it down to a different MDP where the transition function is Markov. Okay, so then what happens in PalmDP is you start with an MDP and you say it also is partially observable. Then you can compile it into, so that becomes a partially observable MDP. That can be compiled into a fully observable MDP where the state just happens to be belief state rather than normal state. Okay, and that would be Markov, except you now have to deal with continuous states instead of finite state, no, discrete state. Okay, right now we are talking about discrete states. In fact, MDPs can also be continuous. We don't discuss this in this class that much, but you know, MDPs can be continuous. And PalmDPs are handled as continuous MDPs anyway. So in some sense, we will discuss it when we get there. And it's pretty painful, you know, interesting but painful. Okay, then you have that's the Markov transition function. And bounded real-valued reward function, which is you get a reward for being in a state. Yes, sir.
Your question. We can still use the model of a state being a set of fluents.
Right now, so keep that in the back of your mind. This whole discussion assumes no internal model for the state because this is atomic.
We can just think of them as collections of names at the moment.
Okay, right now, that's what it is. Okay, and then when we talk about propositional MDPs, yes, in essence, in fact, you can think of states as made up of fluents with their variation, with their values. And then the interesting question is, all the stuff that we discussed today and maybe a little bit of next class, those are the lowest level approaches for handling MDPs, atomic level approaches for handling MDPs. In what ways can they be made faster if you actually know the structure of the state? And the structure and the state is made up of propositions. And then you can talk about relational, you know, MDPs and so on. Okay? Yeah, is there any other question? Okay, so and you have a reward function. Now the reward function basically if you're in the state, you get a reward. Now, the interesting thing about it, MDPs, is the normal MDP model also assumes the reward is Markov. That means the reward you get for being in the state only depends on the state, not on the state that you pass through to get to the state. Now, these are reasonable. So there is a Markov here, there is a Markov here. I already told you if you have this becomes non-Markov, sometimes you can convert it into a Markov property in a different space. You know, the compilation normally tends to increase the size of the space. Okay? And that's found it is. You could also have a scenario, and you know, here I told you one example where it won't be Markov is if in fact you have partially observable state variable. Okay, partially observable state. That means there is some property of the state that you don't actually know from just the names. And so you need to know what sequence of states you went through to get to this state. Okay? And that's when you would have non-Markov here. Now what about non-Markov reward functions? The interesting thing is you could have fully observable worlds but non-Markov reward functions. Okay? So in for example, like a simple case, I think I may have mentioned this going to the Saguaro Lake example, right? So if I go to Saguaro Lake to enjoy Saguaro Lake, which is the reward, I need to have passed through REI here, where I picked up the parking permit for staying, to park my car in Saguaro Lake. Okay? So the reward of the reward I get for being in Saguaro Lake, even though I have eyes and I can see, the reward I can get depends on whether or not I'm already holding, this ticket. You see what I'm saying? So that's a non-Markov reward. Once again, in those cases too, you can convert non-Markov rewards to a Markovian reward system in a larger space. People have done that too. Okay? I mean, these people have to do because of the palm DPs. These people don't have to do unless they have non-Markov rewards. Okay? Yes, sir. Yeah, I mean, so the interesting, it's a good point. So then you could make that. Your point is that at least in that example, non-Markovianness comes from not having the full description of the state. Well, actually, no. So here's the thing. You may know that you don't have the parking ticket. Okay? But you have conditional reward for being in this state. If you happen to have parking ticket, then you have one reward. If not, you have a different reward. At least that much is true. Okay, but yours is a good question. I have to think, remind me. I'll try to get back on that. Okay. And then, of course, this normally the simple model assumes the reward is given by the state, but it's very easy to extend it to say the reward is a combination of the state and the action. So the interesting thing is that you do action A to get to state S, then what reward do you get? So this kind of allows you to take into account cost of actions. Until now, the only thing we actually have is negative rewards. When you do actions, you lose some resources. And that was, modeled as cost, and that can be handled too. Okay? And then, as I said, it's supposedly, in a way, it can be generalized to continuous spaces, but we won't talk about it here. Okay? And so the graphical view of MDP, so now what is the problem here? The problem is you have a bunch of states, and then you can do actions in these states to get to other states, and when you reach those states, you get a reward. Okay? So graphically, you are in this state, because you are in this state, you already got the reward that this state is offering you. And then when you are in this state, you, with your free will, chose to do action A, AT. Okay? and then AT and ST will get you to this state with some probability. Now, because you reach this state, you get some reward again. And then again, now that you are in this state, remember it's a fully observable system, so now that you are in ST plus 1, you know you again get to decide which action to do. You have free will, okay? And so you decide AT plus 1 is what I want to do, and then if you do this action in this state, you will with some probability get to this state. And there you have reward for that. And so in some sense, the agent's life is doing these actions in the states and collecting the rewards. Okay? And so the optimization problem is to collect as much reward as possible. And of course, there is an issue as to how many of these can you do. So very simple. So there are two cases. One is if the agent is allowed to live forever, then even if each of these rewards are small numbers, okay, it would be an infinite summation. And so it's likely to be infinite reward. Okay, now the problem with the infinite reward is you're saying the agent, in what sense does the agent control its own destiny in this case? It controls its destiny by deciding these actions that it gets to do in each, you know, the state where it finds itself is stochastic. It's a stochastic function of the state it was in and the action it chose to do. But then once it finds itself in that state, the action it chooses to do is based on its free will. So different agents depend upon, you know, so they can exercise their own free wills and decide one guy is doing AT, AT plus 1, somebody else is doing A dash T, A dash T plus 1 and so on. And the question then is, who is better? The guy who is better presumably will collect more rewards. Notice that the reward doesn't depend upon the agent's name, it only depends upon the actions and the state. I mean, it only depends on the states, which depend on the actions that were done in the previous states. Okay, now, so in some sense, exercising your free will is the policy you're following. Your policy is, you don't need to have a plan if you have no control over your world. In fact, by the way, planning and control are very closely related. Okay, so in electrical engineering, for example, there's a large number of people who do control theory. Okay, and the planning essentially is coming up with the sequence of actions that you use to control your environment. If your environment cannot be controlled, there is no point in saying, I have a plan, because there is nothing you can do. Okay, so by the way, your control actions that you're coming up with is your policy. Okay, and an optimal policy is one that basically does the right actions at each state such that it maximizes the collected reward. Okay. It turns out that the general MDP, actually you can also ask the question of, you know that a policy's quality depends on the reward collected, okay? But should it depend, for example, on the summation of the reward, or should it depend on some sort of an average rate of collection of reward? And not surprisingly, there are both models in MDP. One is basically summative model, which is what we will look at here. And there are also gain models for MDP, which basically find a policy that maximizes the average reward that you get per step. Those are two different optimization problems. Okay, again, we will look at the optimization problem where we are thinking of some kind of a sum. Now, even when you are summing, there is a question as to how do you sum the rewards. Do you square them and sum them? Do you cube them and sum them? Do you just sum them? We will assume we'll sum them. Okay, and it turns out, I think if you read the textbook, the summative utility function essentially has some very useful properties. So that's why we'll use that. The second issue is if you have infinite, if you can live for a long, long time, then these rewards will all add up to infinity. So a bozo with AT and AT plus 1 as their policy will have an infinity. And another smart guy with AT, A dash T and A dash T plus 1 also will have an infinity. Which infinity is bigger? I mean, unless Cantor is alive and tells you what's going on, you know, you basically are stuck with the possibility that everything looks equal. Okay? So in the case of infinite, so this basically is called the horizon. how long do you get to collect reward before you, they say time is up, you have to stop and just decide how much reward you have collected till now. An infinite horizon MDP basically says you can keep collecting forever and ever and ever, which means then the sum has to be defined such that it converges. And so what you wind up doing, I mean, essentially, is in the case, you know, the way you will sum it is you would say R0, gamma power 0, R0 plus gamma power 1, R1 plus gamma square, R2, blah, blah, blah. So that means the rewards of the future states are going to be multiplied by some constant gamma power n. So the reward you get in the nth state from now, nth horizon, you know, n states afterwards from now, would be multiplied by gamma power n, where gamma is essentially strictly less than 1. Okay? And the only so you can think of why you are doing it in all sorts of interesting ways. One is it's just a mathematical trick. Otherwise, you know, you would get infinities, and two infinities will all be equal. That's one way, and you know, I won't make any apologies. This is what I'll do. The other is I'll say, well, I have a mathematical trick, but I can find a reasonable explanation as to why this is kind of rational thing to do. And that essentially says discounted reward. You discount future with respect to present. Okay, and that's sort of what we do. So if I ask people, if I ask you, would you like to have $10,000 10 years from now or $1,000 now? Okay, not everybody is going to say, I'd rather just wait for $10,000 and have 10 years. No. Okay, yes. That's no, actually, so I think again, the question, the no, the so again, the issue is if I get reward k stages from now, which is bigger than the reward I'm getting now, would I just compare the, you know, all things being equal, would I compare just the magnitudes, or do I discount future with respect to the current state? Okay, and in fact, if you go with that, then you can also make all sorts of interesting, you know, pop psychology observations about different kinds of people. Okay, for example, all of you have gamma equal to gamma closer to 1 or closer to 0? All of you. Closer to 1. That's why you're not getting out of school. Right? Whereas the guy who dropped out of elementary school and say, I got enough, let me start, you know, making money with what I got, they got closer to 0. Okay? If your gamma is equal to 1, you know, your parents are probably going to be really, really sad. If it is close to 0, they'll be also sad because you're trying to drop out of the, you know, elementary school. But, you know, they were hoping that it's somewhere in between. Okay, and in fact, people do talk about this issue of delayed reward, you know, the ability to appreciate delayed reward. Okay, and once again, actually, the gamma depends also on your expectation of the environment you live in. Right? I mean, it's like basically, you know, my classic Farsight. How many of you know Farsight cartoon series? So there's this one Farsight cartoon that I just keep remembering all the time. These two guys are just kind of stumbling in a Thar desert. This is this large desert. And they're like thirsty. They have no water, nothing, right? And then suddenly they find a tap in the middle of Thar desert. The first guy opens the, you know, faucet, and then opens the faucet and starts drinking. And the second guy says, no, wait, let the water fall a little while. After 2-3 minutes, it'll become colder. Okay, now you know who has gamma equal to 1 and gamma equal to 0. Okay, so if you would say probably it's completely irrational to actually let the water fall for 3-4 minutes, because that may be the only amount of water that is there in the faucet, and, you know, you just have no water to drink. So if your environment is going to end right then and there, you want to get as much as you can get, you know, rather than just say delayed reward may be even better. If only I wait longer, I'll get even colder water. Okay? Clearly, this guy is a perpetual optimist. He would have been a great graduate student, you know, 15-20 year PhD dissertation. Let me wait for even better topic. and let me wait for even better number of papers before I graduate. Okay. Anyway, so the point of this is delayed reward is actually a mathematical, I mean discounted reward is a mathematical contraption, but it can also make some reasonable, you know, pop psychological explanations of it. Now, if it is a finite horizon, that means you only get to live exactly for a certain amount of time. For example, for humans, suppose these are like years. You know, every year you get to decide what you do, and you only have so many years, right? And then basically that would be a finite horizon, and you can actually add up the rewards. You don't need to discount them. Yes?
Just one quick question about the diagram.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the definition of a transition was a triple from.
No, it's a probability. So the basic idea is there's a probability associated with it. When you did AT in ST, you would get to ST plus 1 with some probability.
Okay, so I can just picture the arc from ST to ST plus 1 being labeled by AT.
ST to ST plus 1, no. It actually, so it, this is really a Bayes network. Think of this as a Bayes network. How many of you know Bayes network, by the way? I'm hoping all of you, okay. So this is a Bayes network, okay. You, in a Bayes network, how do you give? You give the CPTs for every node given its immediate parents. That's exactly what we are doing.
Okay.
Okay. So basically, ST plus 1 is a random variable which can take values from the real states, 1 to 1,000, let's say whatever the real states 1 to 1,000 are. And this CPT tells you the probability that it will have a particular value given it has this value and this one has this value. Okay, so you can also think of this as sort of a Bayes network. And so in fact, this also allows you to apply Bayesian network inference rules to MDP optimal policy computation. That's an interesting thing. Okay, now, yeah, as far as RT is concerned, you know, here actually this is sort of it, this part is Bayes network, the top one. This one makes it a decision diagram in a sense because you're also getting rewards. They're not, you know, and the reward is not a probabilistic reward. It's like if you are in this state, you will get this, you know, this much reward. Okay? Oh, any other questions? Yes?
And all the time these rewards are positive. I mean, you can't
yes.
do any action that has any kind of negative.
No, yeah. That's the assumption. That's the way we make it. Rewards, maybe, let's see, where we? No. It just has to be real valued.
So if they are negative, then in finite horizon, we may have even some kind of, I mean, number, you know, real number, not infinite number. You know what I mean?
But the point is, those are all divergent series.
Yeah.
It's like 1 plus 1 minus 1 plus 1 minus 1 plus 1 can be made to be either 1 or 0 or any number, depending on how you group terms, right? So it will become divergent. Unless the only way you can make it convergent is to essentially make a power series that converges.
Okay. And agents can like do some action that have both, I mean, probability of negative and positive.
No, probabilities are always positive.
No, okay. Probabilities are positive, right? but the reward, I mean, for example, I'm an agent.
Mm-hmm.
I do an action that, for example, for, I mean, 50% of time I have a positive reward and 50% of time negative reward in the same.
You guys, right? I mean, I'm hoping that you're going through this obviously highly negative reward state because you're hoping that there's some huge light at the end of the tunnel, which would be a big positive reward that makes up for all this, you know, sad life you had, you know, attending classes and listening to people. Okay, so the point is an optimal policy requires you to be able to do actions that are locally irrational, but globally they are the rational thing to do. So indeed, that's exactly the point. So if you ask the guy after elementary school, if you're going to, you know, if you don't have to think about your future at all, would you rather just go work in a candy factory or go join high school? What do you think they'll say? Right? Obviously the rational thing to do, if there is no future, then join the candy store. Right? I mean, you know, of course you may become obese, but if there's no future, you won't be obese either. Right? You're dead. Right? It's only because you may live long and long and long that it becomes actually the right thing to do is to go through this locally unhappy state of being in the high school. so that supposedly you'll get to a better state. Okay, and it is the cumulative reward that matters. The cumulative reward that matters. And by the way, one more thing that you want to think about is stock market. You know, I mean, if you have money and if you actually, you know, so in essence, essentially, you know, this stuff is like actually there's this thing about when if you were to ask somebody, you know, how should I invest my money, and they would tell you, their first question they'll ask is exactly how old are you. That's because they know that humans live for a finite horizon. There is this 102-year-old Japanese lady, mostly everybody is below that, right? And so if you're already like 99, and if you say, how do I invest? They say, are you crazy? Use it. Use it right now. Okay? I mean, that's maybe one way of thinking about it. Okay? In fact, the opposite thing is what they say. So for example, you know, I think Ford, what's the full name of Ford? I forget. Henry Ford. Henry Ford said that you should never save a penny when you are below 30. Just invest it on yourself. Of course, you also don't have any pennies before 30. That's a different story. So he kept thinking that you keep using the money, and that basically you will get through kind of not having much of a money for a while, but then you will hit big, and you'll become Henry Ford or this Mark Zucker or one of these guys, you know. So that too is essentially, that is also a scenario where what you're supposed to do depends on, sometimes you have to take a, you know, temporary loss to gain overall. Yes, sir.
So what happens if the rewards grow quickly enough that the shares still diverge?
Yes, that's why, in fact, what's more important here is that the absolute value of reward is bounded by R max, some constant. Otherwise, what she said will happen. Okay. So this is why, actually, if you remember in the textbook, and it'll come in the next slide too, you would see everything R max divided by 1 minus gamma, and that's not coming from some random place. Essentially, all we are saying is, if you know that. If you have gamma power 0 R1 plus gamma power 2 R2, blah, 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 right? You do know that gamma power 0 plus gamma power 1 plus gamma power 2 plus et cetera gamma power infinity is 1 by 1 minus gamma. That's the summation. Okay? The only thing is, now you are multiplying it by this, you do know that this has to be less than R equal to, if you can always assume all of these are R maxes, so then you take R max out, it will be then this. So this sum will be less than or equal to R max by 1 minus gamma. That's the that R max comes from. Good point. Okay? Okay, so what if you don't have free will? You have, in this picture, if you don't have free will, what do you get? If you don't have free will, means you don't get to do this, then what do you get? So this part is gone. That structure has a name. Remember I told you this is a Bayes network? Okay? So you have a Bayes network where ST leads to ST plus 1 leads to ST plus 2 leads to ST plus 3 leads to etc. What is that structure called? That kind of a Bayes network is called a Markov chain. So Markov chain that you know and love becomes the mean old Markov decision process just because you have free will. Which is why essentially not having a free will means you don't have to use your brain, so it's a easier life. If you have free will, people can say, why did you make those stupid choices? If you are in a totalitarian country, then you say, I didn't do anything. You know, they told me to do this, I do this. So at least you don't have to make any apologies for not thinking well. Okay, Markov chains, basically you don't talk about optimal policies, you are just an observer. You can talk about stationary distribution over the states, but here you get to change the stationary distribution over the states by doing certain actions up front. Yes, sir.
The meaning of not having a free will is not that you have a choice of action to perform. It's that the successor state is always given to you.
Well, I mean, you could do it. I mean, I guess you're talking about Ersad's elections where you get to vote, but they have already decided who's going to win.
Well, no,
right? I mean,
not really. If you get rid of the AT+1, then
it's just a Markov chain.
No,
it doesn't have to be, because remember, it can still be a Bayes network, and there is a CPT here, which says for different values of ST, what is the probability that ST plus 1 will have different values.
Okay.
It's a Bayes network. Think of it as a Bayes network, and these are random variables. States, the states that are being shown here are random variables. Okay, and so of course now, if I cannot actually observe the state, and I don't have actions, then it will be a different kind of a Markov chain, hidden Markov model, HMM. And so PalmDPs are controlling hidden Markov models. MDPs are controlling Markov chains. That's a way of kind of combining what you know from other places. Okay, some more things about this, model, first order Markovian dynamics. All that means is all the other actions and states you did doesn't matter. All that matters is the last state and the last action. Okay, so this is sort of a nice independence assumption, okay, in the Bayes network terminology. And this is sort of like saying essentially that you do only depend on your immediate parents. And there are no arcs to you. So for example, this guy has no separate arc from ST to ST plus 2. If it did, that means it depends on not just the previous state, but the state before that. Okay? First order Markovian reward process, the reward only depends on the current state and the current action, not on anything else. Okay? Stationary dynamics and reward. That's an interesting point. That basically says the probability that you would be in state S. So this right now, essentially, the CPTs don't depend upon the absolute clock time when the transition happened. That's what it means. Okay? The probability, if in fact in the morning when you did action A1 in state S1 with probability 0.3, you will get to S2. Then if you do it in the whole thing in the evening, you'll still have the same probability 0.3 to get to S3. Okay? So that's what stationarity means. Now, it's an assumption. It actually could be. Depending on the way you model the world, it could well be the case that the probabilities will differ based on the clock time. In which case, then you have to make piecewise MDPs, one for one part, one for the other part. Okay. So stationary dynamics, and the reward is also stationary. That means how many ever times you get to this state, you know, it doesn't get to say, I just saw you like three times in a row. I'm not going to give you any more reward. Which is what your mom would say when you keep showing up at the candy box, but. You know, Markov and MDPs are much nicer. They'll just keep giving you until you kind of, you know, have sugar poisoning and die. And to stop you from dying, we will put this discounted reward. But that's about it, okay? And then full observability. Though we can't predict exactly which state we will reach, when we do reach it, we know where we are. This is a very different situation. So you don't know how to predict where you will be before you toss the coin. But after you toss the coin, you know whether it came heads or tails. Whereas a blind person, even after they toss the coin, still can't tell. Okay? Now, policies and plans are basically, policies are essentially this free will, you know, which actions you do at which state that you choose to do. Okay? So in some sense, you can also, by the way, think of this, and you know, this is actually a very useful picture also, that when you do, so, this picture could have been written in a slightly different way. You are in state ST and you chose to do action AT, then you get to some intermediate state which corresponds to you doing action AT in state ST. Okay? And let's say it's a game, you know, and the So let's say it's a chessboard, right? You are in a particular configuration of the board, you did a particular move, you get a new board. Okay? And then your opponent gets to make their move. Your opponent gets to make their move. Okay? And then they would basically look at the current state of the board, and then, you know, if your opponent is trying to make maximum damage to you, they pick the one that will lead to the most damage to you. Okay? So that would be a game theoretic way. So in fact, you can think of this as a game tree. And game trees are more general than Markov deletion processes. Because in the MDP, essentially nature is essentially indifferent to your name and height and face. Okay? And it just uses the same function. And so that basically means that the stochastic dynamics are just this intermediate node. You don't model it, you just model it as a CPT here. Whereas if you really want to think of it as a game with a real person, then that, I mean, another agent, then you need to actually model the intermediate state you got to, and then what the agent did, and then one decision cycle is over. Okay? So I think that game terminology is actually quite useful, because later on, you know, after we look at value iteration and policy iteration, we look at something called real-time dynamic programming that is like essentially indistinguishable from limited depth min-max search. Okay? Okay, so Markov iteration process, stationary dynamics and reward, full observability, policies, we know about, you know, you basically get to decide. So the policy then is your game strategy, your strategy as to what you're going to do when you find yourself in a particular state. Okay, and so you can play chess by essentially making a winning strategy up front. You will say, when I'm in this board position, I will do this move. Then when I'm in this other board position, I will do this move. And so you make a move, and then after your opponent makes a move, then the moderator says, now it's your turn. You look at the board, you look at your big strategy table and says, in this space, I'm supposed to make this move, so I'll just go ahead and move. Okay, and then you are essentially trying to find the optimal strategy for this game against nature. Okay, and then that's called a policy. Okay, and then now the policies can actually be dependent. They can be either stationary or non-stationary. And this is actually an interesting point, because we are essentially saying neither the reward nor the dynamics are non-stationary. They're both expected to be stationary. That's part of the assumption. And yet we talk about policies being either stationary or non-stationary. So in essence, what non-stationary policy means is the best action you are supposed to do depends on how many stages do you get to live. Which is not surprising to you, given all the crazy examples I gave you till now, right? I mean, if, you know, when you got out of the elementary school, you say, you know, you're going to be bombed anyway. I mean, there's too many bombing planes going, you know, maybe in Afghanistan or something. So tell me what you want to do. They won't say, yeah, I think I will do high school and graduate school and PhD, and then maybe start a great company. It doesn't make any rational sense, because you may not be alive tomorrow. So might as well have a good day today. If your horizon is small, then the optimal policy would be to eat lots of candy today. Okay? If your horizon is large, your optimal policy is to probably fast for now, so that later on you can eat lot more candy. You know, after it's all about eating candy. Okay? So the point is that that's exactly, so whenever you have a finite horizon, then the amount of time left before you die plays a part in deciding what's the best action to do. And this is actually not at all surprising. In fact, we are full of, I already told you that the stock market portfolio depends on whether you're 25 years old, or 40 years old, or 65 years old, or 99 years old. Okay, and then here is another quote that I like. You know, if you remember it, you'll never forget non-stationary policies. Winston Churchill once said, if you are 20 and you are not a liberal, you are heartless, and if you are 40 and you are not a conservative, you are mindless. Okay, so he is actually talking about optimal policies, about political, you know, I mean, there are a large number of people, including me, who are mindless, even though they're old, but that's a different story. His argument is there is an optimal policy, and it's time dependent. When you are below 20, you should try to kind of save the world, and you should be a bleeding heart liberal. If you are not, according to him, you are heartless, but, you know, by 40, if you're still kind of doing that, and you're not conservative, then you are mindless. And this, the fact that we make sense of this, that, and we actually understand this, means we believe non-stationary policies exist. Clear, right? Stationary policy, on the other hand, says it doesn't matter what you do. Now, when would, now, of course, I can decide, even when I know that people die after 100 years or below 100 years, I can still tell anybody who comes into my office, I'm a stock, you know, portfolio, stock broker or something, I say, oh, you're supposed to buy this stuff. You know, this, you know, 99% in stocks and 1% in bonds is what you should be doing. I'll keep telling this to everybody. I get to suggest you a stationary policy, whether or not the problem actually requires a stationary or non-stationary policy. The interesting question is, what are the situations where the optimal policy is actually going to be non-stationary? And the optimal policies can be non-stationary, we know, when there is a finite horizon. And similarly, that also means that optimal policies can be stationary when the horizon is infinite, which is not surprising, because if you actually live forever, then the right thing to do today doesn't change tomorrow. Okay, there is some other proverb that I would have written it down. There is an Amish proverb which says, act as if you're going to die tomorrow and you will live forever. So these guys basically don't believe in logical inconsistencies, and they said, you know, but there is a point to it. You know, on one hand, you should do things as if you're going to die tomorrow, but you should also, on the other hand, do things as if you do it always that way, then you're going to trash the environment and there would be nothing left for the next generation. So you should also act as if you're living forever. Okay, and it's some sort of a combination of both is what you're supposed to be, you know, at least in a moral philosophy, that's what we might talk about. Okay, so if you are actually living for infinite horizon, then stationary policy may be, your optimal policy may be a stationary policy. And in fact, there are theorems that show that for infinite horizon Markovitch processes, if there exists an optimal policy, there will also exist an optimal stationary policy. And so just searching for the space in the space of optimal stationary policies will still get you just as much score as searching in the space of all policies, both stationary and non-stationary. Okay. By the way, there is one other issue which we did not even talk about here, stationary, non-stationary, and we can talk about it, both stationary and non-stationary policies are deterministic policies, are deterministic policies. That basically, in the case of stationary, your action depends upon the state and the time left, time to go. And that would decide what the action you would be doing is. Okay? In the state of infinite horizon, your action just depends upon the state. Time to go doesn't make a difference. Okay? In both cases, they are deterministic. There's a single action that you are supposed to choose. But I can also do the following thing, right? Suppose I take this, I can say ST, and here is a distribution over actions. So each state gives you a distribution over actions. And then you toss a coin according to that distribution and you pick the action that you get out of it. And those are called mixed policies or mixed strategies. If you look at the space of all possible policies, you should consider all three types, stationary, non-stationary, and also mixed versus non-mixed. the good point is, you know, if you write, I mean, there's the Bible for MDP is this book called Martin Peterman's. Basically, the name of the book is MDP, Marcodation Processes. It's like that thing. Okay, and it's a nice mathematical treatment for you, for those of you who are really interested. And there, they actually have to. We are going to jump into this idea that okay, in this case, there'll be stationary policies will be optimal. In this case, non-stationary policies will be optimal. But somebody has to prove this. Okay, and the proofs. For example, why don't you have to consider mixed policies? It turns out intuitively, if there is a optimal policy, that is a mixed policy, then there is also an optimal policy, that is a deterministic policy for MDPs. Can you think of generalizations of MDPs based on the discussion we had until now today? Can you think of generalizations of MDPs where the optimal policy itself would be mixed? Yes, sir. Exactly. I mean, again, my favorite joke about this is in the Simpsons, you know, how many of you have seen Simpsons? So Lisa was going to play rock, paper, scissors with Bart to decide something. And then they show, this is like a cartoon part of the Simpsons. And so they have decided that they will decide, you know, some who gets the candy or something based on rock, paper, scissors. And then, so there's a bubble on top of Bart, and Bart is saying, oh, I get to play rock, paper, scissors, I'll win. And then Lisa's bubble says, oh, Bart always picks rocks, so I will win. Do you understand what I'm saying? In the rock, paper, scissors, if I know what you will pick, then you're dead. Right? There is no deterministic strategy for rock, paper, scissors. Right? And the point is to make people believe that you are likely to pick any one of these three until the last minute. And in fact, you almost have to, I mean, in the game theory, there's all these beautiful things that you need to show to the other person that you're completely irrational. You're just going to really, really toss a coin. Otherwise, you know, when, remember the good old days where there was Cold War between, you know, US and Russia, and if it comes, the word comes out that there's a little book in which the president of US wrote that, you know, I really don't want to start the war, even if they just send a bomb, I'll probably wait for 3 days before sending another bomb. And if this comes out, then you may as well just, you know, go and give the country away, and vice versa. Okay, it's mixed policy is very important. So we are just going to essentially, in those cases, in these kinds of games, right, you know, not that particular game, but in the rock, paper, scissors, you need the mixed policy. That's the optimal policy. There is no optimal policy that is deterministic. So what makes MDP be special case of, I mean, what makes MDPs have deterministic policies is essentially because it's not a game. So for example, if you are playing game with nature, right, you can say, I'm going to carry I'm not going to carry an umbrella. And it's not like nature says, man, Rao is not going to carry an umbrella. Today would be a good day for rain. It won't do that. You know, the probability of rain doesn't depend upon whether I carry the umbrella or not. Whereas if I make a nice, you know, announcement saying, tomorrow's flights won't have any US Marshals on board. Right? Right. You know, I mean, tomorrow's flights won't have any safety covering on the top. Lightning won't strike them any more than yesterday. Whereas tomorrow's flights won't have any US Marshals on board, more interesting incidents might happen inside the plane than before. Okay, because one is a game, the other is essentially a game against nature, where the nature doesn't care about you. Okay, so that's the other point about deterministic versus mixed policies. Okay, and this is the deterministic action choice part. It is possible to actually come up with mixed strategies for MDPs. It's no big deal. It's just that you don't need to search in that space because that's a much larger space, essentially. Okay. And you should be able to, so now we are talking in terms of computing the optimal policies. That one question would be, why not just consider a sequence of actions instead of policies, which are basically tables of states to actions and states and time to go to actions. You should know the answer to this. Does anybody have trouble with that? you should be able to think about why not consider sequence of actions, basically because of the stochastic dynamics. Even though you know where you started from, once you do an action, you no longer know which state you are likely to be. And if you don't, and so you will, when you open your eyes, you will know which state you are in, but then it may not be a line of state going all the way to the goal state. Once in a while, you'll come out. And there is, there may be a straight line plan, and there is a large number of states around it with low probabilities that you might find yourself in. And an optimal policy should tell you what to do in all those cases. Right, for example, one of the classic points, I mean, when you're talking about airline things, right, that most of us basically have a completely, I mean, of course, we are humans, we don't do any optimal anything, but, you know, we think we bought a very nice cheap ticket to fly from somewhere to somewhere, we did an optimal thing. But, you know, most of the time a plane takes off from here, lands where it's supposed to land. Now, sometimes the planes will start having all sorts of problems, like it's about to fall down, okay? And there was actually a show I saw on one of the news programs as to basically close to 98% of us do exactly the wrong things, when the plane is about to go down. There are the optimal things to do, and we'll do exactly the non-optimal things. For example, most people, when they sit in the plane, don't know where the exit is. They just assume everything, since they came from like the beginning of the plane, that's where the exit is, and they'll all try to run for that. Huge number of people fall into each other, and they're all just basically do not get out. Okay, so you might say, look, I don't know what the optimal thing to do is when the plane is going down, but I'm hoping it won't go down, right? Which is fine. But that's exactly what we did in the stock market in 2008 and 2007, right? I don't know what to do when the entire housing bubble collapses, but I'm hoping it won't happen, right? And yet, some people did the optimal things, and they still are billions ahead of the game, and some people, the rest of the 99% of the population did the suboptimal things, and they are not as rich as they were before. Okay, so the optimal policy, if you are into it, the optimal policy would depend on, even if there's a very small likelihood that you will get into a certain state, you should know what's the optimal action to do in that state. Even though when you're going from here to San Francisco, the state of the plane just going zoop like that down to the road is very low probability, there is a suboptimal as well as an optimal action to do in that state. And if you don't know the optimal action to do in that state, then if you were to get there, then you won't be doing, you would be getting pretty bad reward, you know. And which basically means expected cumulative reward with your policy would be lower than expected cumulative reward for those people who see 2020 and, you know, start being very paranoid. Of course, I mean, the paranoid people will also have low cumulative reward because they don't actually take planes. That's a different story, okay. But again, the point I want to make is you can't think of sequences of actions because you don't quite know which states you will get into. And you have to, you know, consider. So one way we will notice later on, even though in the beginning we will look for optimal policies directly in the S times A mapping. A mapping from S to A, okay, or S and time to go to A mapping, okay. Later on, we will actually see that one way of computing the optimal policy is in a sort of an anytime fashion. That means first get a plan and then slightly improve it, okay. Is, for example, you'll assume when I'm taking the flight, it'll actually not fall down. And then actually come up with a plan for going from here to here. And then you have a bunch of actions, you know, go to the airport, you know, stand in the security line, take the flight, sit down, put on your belt, and then, you know, sleep and get out, right? And then now that you have made this plan and the flight is not going to start until tomorrow, you have time to kill. So you can start thinking about all sorts of paranoid things that can happen now, right? So what if when I try to get onto the taxi, you know, I actually won't find any taxis? So I basically have a possibility, a low probability that I'll get into a state where taxis are on strike. That's low probability in Tempe, very high probability in France, for example, or Italy. Because, you know, actually I think in Italy, and definitely also, I think Italy is a little more advanced. In India, strikes can happen without actual notice. in Italy, part of the paper, they will say, today strikes. And they will say, where are all the things will be on strike? And so then you know the probability of various strikes happening. And so based on those states, then you will decide what would be the optimal action for those. So in some sense, you will get the line, and then you will try to improve the envelope of states into which you, what the optimal policy, optimal action is. And that's actually a way of computing optimal policy. That's more any time. Okay, we can do that, but eventually in the asymptotic case, you should know what to do in every reachable state. You should know what's the optimal action in every reachable state. That's why the atomic method just directly try to do that. They'll try to do what's the optimal action to do in every state. Okay, as long as we're talking about this, what's the size of these policies? Suppose suppose there are n states. Suppose there are n states, okay, and to make life simple, in every state you can do a different actions. That basically means actions are have no preconditions, they only have conditional effects, essentially, in our terminology. Okay, then how many policies are there? What? Because, yeah, it's a power n, because in the first state you can do a different actions. The second state you can do a different actions, third state different a different actions, and so there are a power n policies. I'm sorry, it's a power n policies. Okay. Okay. And this is worth remembering, because if you were to look for the optimal policy by enumerating every possible policy and computing what its quality measure is and picking the one that's the best, then in the worst case you would do work that is exponential in the number of states. So in fact, it's actually better to think in terms of not n but f. Let's just say there are s states and a actions, so that you'll remember which is which, and then you would be doing a power s policies, and the brute force approach would be to enumerate each policy and check if what its quality measure is. We'll talk about the quality measure in a minute, okay, and then pick the one with the best one, okay. And if you have this is if it is a stationary policy. If you have a finite horizon, okay, of t steps to go, then what is the size of the policy? Size of the policy would be, for each number of steps to go, you need a policy. So it would be t times a power s. Okay, now that I made you be very worried that this is a horrendously bad problem, because it's exponential in the number of states. Exponential in the number of states. Now, if you remember, we got into this mess from happy places, where we were considering states themselves are made up of n propositions and state variables. Right? So S is really 2 power n. So you're talking about a power 2 power n, where n is the number of state variables, okay, and then this is a t times a power 2 power n. Yes?
It's not t times, it's a to the st.
A to the, why?
Because for each state and each amount of time left, you need to decide an action.
Yeah. So think of, no. suppose, think about the following thing. Suppose I only have two steps to go. Then I need one policy when I have two full steps to go. Another policy, I have only one step to go. That's it. It's not square. Okay?
It's talking about the number of possible faults or possible.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is okay, then the policies are, let's see.
The length of the policy becomes T times, the policy becomes T times as large, so say to the ST.
Let me think about this. Okay? Because especially since we only have 3 minutes. Okay, it's a good point, and let me think about this and get back to you. But either way, you're dead. The 2 power n is in the exponent, and the good thing is by using the Bellman equation, which is basically doing dynamic programming, okay, then we will show that you can find the optimal policy in time that's only polynomial in the number of states. Polynomial in the number of states, okay, which is still exponential in the number of state variables. So in the propositional representation, the input is measured in terms of the state variables, right? So it's still exponential in the number of state variables, but at least it's polynomial in the number of states, okay? Okay, let's see if I have time for this. Okay, so let's just talk about this, start talking about this, and we have to continue next class. So given a policy, you need to talk about how good the policy is. Okay, if you want to do just the brute force one, then for each policy, essentially, you need to say what is its value. Okay, for finite horizon case, it is actually reasonable. It's you know, easy enough. Basically, what you would do is you would obviously, because there is stochastic dynamics, then the value has to be computed as the expected value over many possible simulations. Okay, so if your policy says, let's say, a particular function of f of s t to a, okay, then you would start basically starting from, you know, the initial state, okay, and, you know, assume that there are t time steps to live, okay, you pick the action that you're supposed to pick according to this policy, do it, then you'll get a new state, then you will pick the action you are supposed to pick if you are in this state and you have t minus 1 steps to live, do it, and then continue. Every time you do, every time you get into a state, you get a reward, right? And then you just remember that reward, you add it up. When all t iterations are over, you got t rewards. You know the cumulative reward you got on this time. Do this whole thing again. This whole thing again, about a million times. Okay? Take the average cumulative reward you got. This is the value of this policy. This is the value of this policy. Okay? And you can basically generalize the same idea to infinite horizon policies, where you essentially keep, I mean, you never stop. So the advantage in the simulation for the T horizon case is you only do T actions and add up those T state rewards you got and restart the experiment again. Okay, you do this a million times, you get a million cumulative rewards, add them all up, divided by million, that's the average reward you got for this policy. And you got, if your friend has a different policy, you do the same thing for your friend and you get an average number. And in fact, there are only, in this case, these many policies, so for each one of these policies, you compute this quality number, and whichever has the highest quality number, that is the optimal policy. Okay? That's basically your lowest level idea. And what we will do when we come back next class is essentially to realize that this picture, I'll show you this picture, we'll come back later. Yeah, that you can think in terms of policies when you have one step to go. Suppose you are here and you have no more time left. You're dead. Then what's the value you're going to get? You're going to get whatever you found yourself in. This is like, you know, when the musical chairs, when the whistle goes off, whichever chair you are close to is the chair you're going to get. That's it. If you're not close to any chair, then you lost it. Okay, and so we'll talk about this intermediate concept called value that you taught about, which is essentially the value that you can achieve when you are in a particular state and you have no more time to live is the immediate reward that state gives you. That's it, because you are not going to live anymore. Now, given that, then if you have one more day to live, then you can ask yourself, which of these, for each of these states, what is the best action to do? So for example, if I'm in this state, I can do one action which will take with 0.7 here, 0.3 here. When I go here, I get just this immediate reward. And when I go here, I get this guy's immediate reward. So expected immediate reward I'll get here is 0.7 times this plus 0.3 times this plus the reward of this guy itself. And if I have a different action that will get me to this and this, that will have a separate expected reward. Whichever is bigger, I pick that. Now, in trying to compute what's the best action to do here, I will assume that basically nothing here changes. And similarly, having computed the best actions here, then I can compute the best actions with two steps to go recursively in terms of the best actions for here. Because by this time, you would know the best value of each of these states if you only have exactly two steps to live. And one beautiful point you want to understand is the value of a state is different from the reward, immediate reward of a state. Immediate reward of a state could be negative, like going through PhD program, and the value of the state could be priceless. I mean, I'm not saying whether it's negative or positive because I'm obviously a biased person, right? But because essentially it's what all happens after this state. Now you can do PhD and then go do drugs after PhD. And then you can say, my God, it's the PhD which did this bad thing to me. Or you can do PhD and, you know, actually exploit the PhD. Okay, and the value of PhD is determined not by the guy who screws up after PhD, but by the guy who does the optimal thing after PhD. If the best optimal thing you can do after PhD is to do drugs, then so be it. Then, you know, PhD is a bad thing to do. But it's just you, with your infinite free will, decided to do drugs after, you know, PhD. Okay, and many of the other people were able to do more optimal actions. Then, in fact, the value of the PhD depends on the most optimal value that anybody received. Okay, any state is a vantage point from which you can do optimal things from there. If you're not even in that state, certain actions are not feasible for you. Just because you're in that state, you would do those. It's not guaranteed that you would do those actions. You need to still exercise your free will to do those actions. That's why the value of a state, k steps to go, is determined in terms of the optimal policy, k steps to go. And then k plus 1 steps to go is then determined in terms of the value function of the k steps to go. If you do this, you can actually see that the total time you spend in computing the optimal policy this way will only be polynomial in terms of the number of states rather than exponential in the number of states. So we'll come back, look at this, and go to the infinite horizon, look at the theorems and so on.